Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Hello, folks, and welcome to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Market and Cafe. Gateway is Central Iowa's premier good food store and brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate personalized service. If you're looking for quality foods with a community focus, check out Gateway Market and Cafe. All right, hey, Ed Fallon with you here after week one of the Save America March. And yeah, it's been quite an experience. I wasn't expecting to do any days over 15 miles, but Wednesday turned out to be a 19-mile day. And part of the challenge this past week, the first week, was it is so darn hot. I mean, an entire week or more of 80-degree weather. Sometimes I think it skirted into the 90s. And that's really tough stuff to walk in. Anyway, so I made it. I made it through that and had some really good conversations with people. Two of the five host families that I stayed with during the first week were Republican. Again, my goal is to have conversations across the political aisle and to talk about why it's important to save our democracy, why it's important to recognize that we are at the risk of authoritarianism. And, you know, it was great to have, I don't have a lot of confidence in the mainstream media, but it was nice to see one media outlet, one TV station take an interest in the march. It was a station out of Cedar Rapids, grateful for that, KCRG. And, you know, just to, reiterate why this is important, there was a Quinnipiac University poll from, just this past month, September. And it found that among registered voters who were polled, 79% believe the U.S. is in a political crisis. That's a fairly general description, but, you know, just kind of refining that analysis a little bit further, going back to June. In June, another poll, I think it might have also been a Quinnipiac poll, found that 24% of Americans believe the U.S. has already become a dictatorship. And that was up from 18% in February of this year. So, and again, this is 4 months ago. That broke down, you know, 35% of the Democrats polled believe the U.S. is already a dictatorship. 7% of Republicans polled believe that. Now, a different poll, this is by Public Religion Research Institute. I'd not heard of them. But an April poll found that 52% of Americans believe that Donald Trump is a, quote, dangerous dictator. That's back in April. And we've seen what's happened since then. And now, also in April, there was another poll. This was by Brightline Watch. Again, something I've never heard of. But it was a survey, more of a survey than a poll, I suppose, of 500 political scientists. And the vast majority of them think the U.S. is moving swiftly from a liberal democracy towards some form of authoritarianism. So this is where I'm coming from. I mean, and I don't agree with those. If I've been polled in that Quinnipiac poll, do you believe the U.S. is already a dictatorship? I would have said no. I still don't think we are there, but I think we are heading in a very dangerous direction very quickly. And I have not hesitated to share that with people on this march. So I want to share with you a few clips from conversations I had with people either during my overnight stays or in some cases during the march. I mean, I ran into someone I met 10 years ago A guy whose family put me up when I walked on the Dakota Access Pipeline route. I ran into another couple of people in Windsor Heights when I was walking from Pleasant Hill to Clive. One of them had volunteered on my campaign like 30 years ago. And the other one heard me play organ at her church. And she said something interesting that I really wish I'd had more time to dig into. She said, I used to be a Democrat, and then I thought, well, I'm basing too much of my voting decisions on opinions. I need more facts. And she said that she claimed that as she learned facts, she became a Republican and supported Donald Trump. And I wish I'd had more time to talk about that. I also ran into a woman in, I think also in Clive, an older woman who had heard of me and my political work before and was very much concerned about Donald Trump. So, it's people are all over the board, but I think polling shows that there is concern about where we're heading. And one of the rulings this past couple of weeks that have disturbed a lot of people is a memorandum that kind of takes a shot at nonprofits that Donald Trump doesn't like. I'm going to play that clip from you. It's an interview with Heather Jones Brown. All right, I'm talking with Heather Jones Brown, who has been sharing with us kind of disturbing details about a memorandum that just came out from the Trump administration.
Yeah, so this memorandum is the National Security Presidential Memorandum number 7, and it was issued on September 25th, 2025. And you can find it on the White House website. It is out there for the public to see. And what it kind of does is it dramatically expands the government's ability to investigate, monitor, and prosecute individuals and organizations engaged in what they deem political violence, domestic terrorism, and racial intimidation.
And this is kind of a response to the killing of Charlie Kirk over there, the kind of using that horrible murder as an opportunity to push back against the entire movement of organizations that disagree with Trump. That's my impression.
That's what I would assume is okay. How it kind of stemmed from that is what I would assume. And the thing that like really makes me feel quite uncomfortable about it all is it's essentially what it does is it allows for anybody that they deem to be against what they think is okay to be labeled as Antifa, which essentially just means anti-fascist movements. And as a
irony there, isn't there?
Yes, a little bit of some irony, right. Absolutely. And it also allows for them to be able to look at your social media accounts, look at the organizations that you either work with or operate. It can start looking at your donors.
That's not even legal right now. I mean, a nonprofit, to my understanding, does not have to reveal its donor list.
Yeah, so
that could change.
It could change, and I think that a lot of what I think they're trying to do is put a lot of fear into folks. It makes me want to think about and operate as strategically as I can to make sure that if I am putting myself out there, it's for something that I'm prepared to be publicly out there for.
Like doing this interview.
Yes, like doing this interview. Okay. Yes, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So where do you think this will go next? I mean, right now it's not law. It's a memorandum. It's saying, hey, think about this stuff, folks within my administration, right?
Mm-hmm.
So where does it go next? Or is it going to get put? I mean, I would think there would be First Amendment people on the right that would be very much concerned about this as well.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's the thing that I think that most of us need to be thinking about now is where the things that are starting to happen and that we are seeing occur are not just about one group. It really is to stymie the voice of the people, mm-hmm. regardless of what their viewpoints are. And it's not allowing them to have it's not allowing people to be able to have discourse and critical thinking in a way that people can, you know, present their arguments and be able to hear from others about their arguments as well.
Something encouraging we saw after Jimmy Kimmel was basically censored by the Trump administration was pushback from others on the political right.
Yes.
Ted Cruz.
Mitch McConnell. I mean, people saying, no, this is good. This is a suppression of the First Amendment, and it could be used against us at some point. Do you think we'll see that in this case as well?
That's my hope. I mean, I think it, I think we are getting, my hope is that we are getting closer and closer to an understanding that this is an issue for every single person that lives, works, and is born and raised in the United States. And it is not about any political party or about any one person's viewpoints. It is about our opportunity to be able to speak freely like we have been able to speak through majority of the history of the United States.
Well, you've studied this, and I know you've been sharing it with people, and you shared it at one of the meetings we've had during the first week of my Save America March. So thank you. And keep sharing the information people need to know about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the time.
That was my conversation with Heather Jones Brown during the overnight at Joe Henry's on Monday, first night of the first day of the march. I also talked with Connie Mullman, who is from rural Iowa, and she and many other people too have concerns about the impact that Medicaid cuts are going to have on rural hospitals and rural healthcare in general.
Hey, I'm talking to Connie Mullman. Connie, you were originally from Hardin County.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Iowa Falls.
And I understand there's a hospital in Iowa Falls that has been very instrumental in the community's healthcare, but also in terms of employment.
Absolutely. Ellsworth Hospital is one of the biggest employers in the area. And we also have the newest and most extensive hospital facility in Hardin County.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
And it's been very well used. I mean, I guess it'd be great if hospitals weren't so well used. But
yeah.
Is there been any conversation about how Medicaid cuts might impact the hospital?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know that the hospital for years has struggled to make ends meet, and they've put those numbers out in the community, and with the current administration's cut to Medicaid and Medicare. I've got to think that it's certainly within the realm of possibility that this hospital could close, and it would be devastating to that area.
Where would people have to go for the medical care? How far and wide?
I would say probably 50 miles to Mason City, 50 miles to Cedar Falls, 50 miles to Ames, or probably 70 miles to Des Moines.
Wow. Okay. And, I imagine there's a fair amount of employment at the hospital as well?
Yeah.
How many, any idea?
I would hate to guess.
And I'm also going to guess that this might be a problem for rural communities across the state and certainly across the country.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So are any people in Iowa Falls starting to say, well, maybe these cuts are not what we expected from the new administration?
I no longer live in Iowa Falls. I live here in Des Moines, so I don't have those conversations anymore, specifically, but I can imagine that there's certainly worry, in that area as far as, employment, as far as healthcare. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens, and I imagine I'll be having similar conversations with other communities. I'll be going through other mid-sized towns on this march that also have hospitals, and we'll see how they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Connie, thanks for the information.
I also talked with Joe Henry, who's the state political director for the League of United Latin American Citizens, about immigration and about the arrests and deportations that are occurring.
What's your impression of how the heavy-handed activities of ICE, I mean, the most high-profile case here was the recent arrest of Des Moines School Superintendent Ian Roberts. But there have been other, you know, less high profile cases of Latino people and others being arrested. What's your impression of how that's impacting both the economy here, but also how it might be impacting people who voted for Trump, maybe on the premise that, well, yeah, people doing criminal acts shouldn't be here, but now they're starting to see that, well, you know, these aren't criminals, and some of them aren't even, you know, some of them are U.S. citizens. So how's that rolling out as we see how ICE is reacting?
Yeah, you know, it's a very scary situation within the Latino community, especially since most undocumented immigrants are from Latin America. So a lot of fear that it has created. You know, it's going to have an impact on the economy if it hasn't already, especially when it comes to farming, dairy, meat processing, various sections of the service sector, and construction. And this is going to seep over, you know, into the white community too, and to many different other sectors. It's just very scary. And he is using this as a way to go after our constitutional rights, because he is using the removal of due process when it comes to arresting undocumented immigrants, which when you do that, when you don't allow the opportunity of someone to have an attorney to receive paperwork on why they're being arrested. And let's make it clear, to be undocumented, that's a misdemeanor. That's not a felony. It's a misdemeanor. Right.
And Trump is also, well, and ICE at any rate, here we talked about this on my program last week in Woodbury County in Northwest Iowa, a court ruling indicated that a particular man who had been arrested should be released on bond. ICE ignored that court order by refusing to honor the bond.
Right. Yes, and we actually, a press release is going out this morning exactly on that. His constitutional rights have not been acknowledged. And again, when it comes to undocumented immigrants and their right to have an attorney and to post bond and to be heard in court, when you take away those constitutional rights, that's a violation. That's a big one. And again, that's a slippery slope. Because if it can be done to an undocumented immigrant, it can be done to anybody who the government considers a threat. This is going to, when you attempt to take away due process and not acknowledge the constitutional rights of everybody, this will seep over to the overall community. So it's a scary situation. We should all be concerned about this. We should all be fighting about this. Even the Trumpsters themselves should be concerned about what's happening. The Latino community, the immigrant community, are being used as a ploy to go after the constitutional rights of all Americans. And I know that this is not being really realized right now, but it will be soon, because that is the plan. That's the 2025 plan.
That was a conversation with Joe Henry, the state political director of the League of United Latin American Citizens here in Iowa. Short break, folks. Back in a minute with more conversation from the Save America March. This is Ed Fallon on the Fallon Forum.
You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our partners, including Catholic Peace Ministry, whose focus is on nuclear disarmament. the war between Israel and Hamas, the war in Ukraine, and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. Thanks also to Westrum Optometry. Dr. Joel Westrum and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrum Optometry. All right, Ed Fallon with you folks, and week one of my 300-mile, five-week Save America March around Iowa. And I'm well aware, too, that Save America March was the tagline used for the attempted insurrection on January 6th after Joe Biden won the presidency years ago. And it's always bothered me that if extremists take language that is clearly inaccurate, and again, you know, raiding the Capitol, the U.S. Capitol, beating police officers, putting your, you know, just taking over the House chamber. None of that has anything to do with saving America. In fact, it is the opposite of saving America. So I'm reclaiming that language because we are trying to save American democracy from where it's heading. So two of my hosts this past week were Republicans. One of them, a former Republican lawmaker who I consider a friend, an evangelical Christian, Chuck Hurley. And he and his wife were kind enough to host me. And it was kind of fun because it was a Bible study, which I'm okay with. We all you know, shared different elements of Scripture that we thought were relevant. I talked about the importance of knowing them by their fruit. And yeah, that was a reference to it's a reference across the spectrum, but certainly you see that with Donald Trump, in my opinion, somebody whose fruit is not very palatable. But it was interesting, too, that I was running into people that I've known from my past life, including a couple people who I'd met on the picket line at Firestone back in 1993 during that strike. A woman who reminded me that she'd been into my home years ago and enjoyed seeing our chickens. And another guy who reminded me that he'd been on my talk show back when I was on the big radio station. So it was kind of a funny reunion of sorts. And they're all really good people. I enjoyed meeting them, enjoyed our conversation, enjoyed playing a little music with them. And don't agree on everything, obviously, but here's my conversation with Chuck Hurley.
Do you think, as some political and media pundits would like us to believe, that there really are two Americas, or can we be one people?
One of the great things that was said tonight by one of the observant participants was that the news media sells papers, sells digital, whatever, on conflict and hatred and bloodshed and murder. And so...
if it leads, it bleeds.
If it leads, it bleeds. So, yeah, I think that for the most part, civilization has found a way to get along. At times, obviously not, and that's the things that we remember, like the world wars and the Rwanda genocides and so on.
Can I add the Gaza genocide
and
to that?
Wherever there's people dying and innocent people being hurt and weeping and crying and gnashing. So definitely there's problems, but I am an optimist in a couple of senses. One is that Jesus has overcome sin. He's allowed us and invited us to a heavenly home where there'll be no more tears or sorrow or pain. And two, he has said, ask him that his will would be done and his kingdom would come here on earth as it is in heaven. And when we participate in that, when the well of living water, as Jesus talked about, is flowing through us, we can love. He even said it. He said, love your enemies. We can get along, even if we disagree deeply.
And can a devout Christian like you appreciate and accept Muslims, Hindus, atheists? Is that within your realm of...
More than accept, a devout Christian is commanded by Jesus to love those people.
What are your thoughts on the political realm?
I think that our founders gave us a fabulous opportunity to shape our governmental realm. And I think that we, the people, as the sovereign You know, we actually are the highest level of responsibility in our government.
We should be.
We the people. We're actually a democratically elected constitutional republic, and it's worked fabulously well. But only when we the people participate well. And so the slide to authoritarianism, the slide to Marxism, the slide to anything is a result of we the people letting it slide. We the people have to step up.
Do you think we're sliding toward authoritarianism?
I think that there will always be people who want to be tyrants and take more power than is due them, always. And so are there people in the government today in Iowa, in Washington, in Moscow, who are trying to grasp more power? Absolutely.
Is Trump one of them?
I think he has a very strong personality. You'll know them by their fruits. I think he has been the head guy at his company for decades. What's interesting to me is that the people in his company have said that he was a pretty decent boss. So I'm not sure that he's doing anything other than exercising his very strong personality. And I do think it's vital that the other branches of government, the Congress and the courts, do their job so that his forceful personality doesn't skew our wonderful balance of powers.
That was my conversation with Chuck Hurley. He and his wife, Chris, were wonderful hosts. Again, we disagree on a bunch of stuff. He comes at the conversation from a deeply evangelical Christian perspective. You know, and I have no hope that my walking around Iowa, 300 miles or however many miles it'll be, will instantly change hearts and minds, but I'm happy to plant seeds, and I'm also happy to learn. I understand that I will also probably change and grow as this process continues. But I think it's pretty clear to me that you know, the more we see from President Trump, the more we will understand that this is not a normal presidency. This is not consistent with the parameters of the U.S. Constitution. I want to jump ahead from what I've learned on this trip and just play a clip from something many of you might have heard already this week. This is Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth. A little excerpt from his speech to the 800 generals that were ordered to come to the U.S., return from their posts to hear a speech and maybe get reamed a bit. Here's what Hegseth had to say.
When it comes to combat arms units, and there are many different stripes across our joint force, the era of politically correct, overly sensitive, don't hurt anyone's feelings leadership ends right now. For too long, we've promoted too many uniformed leaders for the wrong reasons, based on their race, based on gender quotas, based on historic so-called firsts. This administration has done a great deal from day one to remove the social justice, politically correct, and toxic ideological garbage that had infected our department, to rip out the politics. No more identity months, DEI offices, dudes in dresses. No more climate change worship. No more division, distraction, or gender delusions. But when it comes to any job that requires physical power to perform in combat, those physical standards must be high and gender neutral. If women can make it, excellent. If not, it is what it is. If that means no women qualify for some combat jobs, so be it. It all starts with physical fitness and appearance. If the Secretary of War can do regular hard PT, so can every member of our joint force. Frankly, it's tiring to look out at combat formations, or really any formation, and see fat troops. Likewise, it's completely unacceptable to see fat generals and admirals in the halls of the Pentagon. and leading commands around the country and the world. It's a bad look. It is bad, and it's not who we are.
Wow. I'm not sure I can add anything that's already been said about this, but, you know, and of course that was followed up by Trump using his address to, you know, take a shot at, the cities that he says are Democratic cities. Although we know that, I mean, if there's Des Moines a Democratic city, there are plenty of people on our block who vote Republican who are independent, you know, so I don't know, I guess we're cities that are run by radical Democrats. But, you know, he says, quote, we're going to straighten them out one by one, and this is going to be a major part for some of the people in this room, speaking to the generals. He said, Trump said, quote, that's a war, too. It's a war from within. We should use some of these dangerous cities as training grounds for our military. Now, how can that not send chills up your spine? You know, one thing about this march of mine is I'm learning as I go, and things are continuing to happen in the news in the world, and I want to be more aware of sharing immediate developments with people that I meet, and you know, get their take. I mean, I didn't ask Chuck that question. How do you feel about these military deployments to our cities? I wish I had. I'd like to know how other people feel about it. I mean, I don't see how anybody, Democrat or Republican, can feel good about that. Now, there's an interesting story in The Intercept. They were able to speak with three generals who spoke on the condition of anonymity, of course, who said they were embarrassed. They said, quote, we are diminished as a nation by both Hegseth and Trump. Listening to Donald Trump is deeply troubling, and it is clear he is unfit for the role of commander-in-chief. Trump lectured our military leaders on his victimization and inability to let go of perceived past slights. Quote, this is truly disturbing. He is clearly unwell, even for Trump. That was from a second defense official, who said, quote, this is incredibly embarrassing for the U.S. Imagine sitting through this in person. So here's Representative Moulton's response to that speech.
It's unbelievably un-American. It betrays the oath that these officers take to the Constitution, not to Donald Trump. And it's really dangerous for our national security. I mean, first of all, it's simply dangerous to have all these people in one place at the same time and tell the world 2 weeks in advance it was going to happen. But the precedent that it's setting, that the president is talking about turning our troops against American citizens, using American cities as training grounds. I mean, we're used to crazy stuff from Donald Trump, but this is about as unconstitutional as it gets.
Congressman, do you think he'll do it? Have active duty soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines train in American cities?
I'm always cautious to try to predict the mind of Donald Trump. But the general lesson I've learned is that when you think Donald Trump is going to do something bad, he'll probably do something worse.
That was Congressman Seth Moulton. He's a Marine vet, and he's also the Democrat serving on the Armed Services Committee. So moving from that speech to the generals and the threat of using the military in U.S. cities. And I mean, the latest one to be, quote, attacked is Portland, Oregon. So, and Trump announced just this past week that he was going to send troops there to it. He called it war-ravaged Portland. And he was authorizing full force if necessary to deal with, quote, domestic terrorists. And, of course, he didn't really say what he meant by full force, but that sounds pretty intimidating. Now, interestingly, a judge appointed by Trump, this is a Judge Karen Immergut. She's a U.S. District Attorney. She blocked the president from sending 200 State of Oregon National Guard troops to Portland. So Trump's response was to send 300 National Guard members from California. And when that happened, Governor Newsom immediately sued, saying, no, you cannot mobilize our National Guard to a neighboring state. And the judge said, you absolutely can't do that because my ruling doesn't just mean you can't use Oregon National Guard troops in Portland. You can't use National Guard troops, period. Again, she was appointed by Trump. And, you know, so we'll see what happens. As of the taping of this program, it's still unclear whether Trump is going to obey that order. But, again, he's already sent National Guard troops from California. A reporter just this weekend asked Trump if he intends to follow the judge's order. And Trump replied, this is so lame, that his team had not yet seen the order, but would look at it. And then Trump referred to the judge many times as a he, though totally not aware that it was a woman. And I think originally not aware that he had appointed her. And he later criticized the judge and repeated the inflammatory descriptions of Portland, declaring that the city is, quote, burning to the ground, and that the judge, quote, ought to be ashamed. I mean, this is unhinged and unconstitutional. And I'm going to do a better job the next week of this walk of bringing up these examples to people I meet and say, does this concern you? Is this not the very face of authoritarianism? Well, hey, I got to take a short break. When we come back, I got another interview with a Republican friend of mine who hosted me on this march, Pat Bertrosch, who was also a candidate for Congress years ago. He's a very different kind of Republican than Chuck Hurley. And I'll share some of that conversation with you when we come back from a break on the Fallon Forum.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to Surrey County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Surrey County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, so I stayed with Pat Bertrosch. Pat and I first met because he was involved with radio as well. And he used to have a program with a left-wing goofball, I think is how he likes to refer to anybody on the political left. And it's all in jest. And I had him on my show. I might have been on his show once. Anyway, we also shared the experience of having run for Congress, me in 2008, him in 2010, on different in different primaries, me a Democratic primary, him a Republican primary. And again, I asked him, are we heading toward authoritarianism? And here's our conversation.
Hey, I'm here talking with Pat Bertrosch, who was kind enough to put me up last night as I came through Waukee on my way to Van Meter. Pat, welcome to the conversation.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks for coming by. I appreciate you insisting that I put you up for a night. And, you know, eating my food, watching my TV.
Well, and having some conversation.
It was great. It was a great conversation.
You know, we had a few people over. Some, as you call them, left-wing loonies.
Yes, a couple of left-wingers.
Some responsible Republicans.
Yes, there you go. That's exactly right.
Okay. And you are a retired physician.
I am.
And you're also, again, politically active. You ran for Congress once or twice?
I just ran once.
Once. That was smart. That was smart.
Yeah, don't do it. I'm telling you. Don't do it.
And that was back in, what, 2010, I think?
2010.
Yeah, there was like a five-way Republican primary, I think.
I think there was 216 of us in there. No, there's eight people. There's eight people, and the people joined and did quit. It was crazy.
So why would you let such a left-wing loony as myself into your house? What's wrong with you?
I don't know. I felt bad for you. You look like a bedraggled kitten outside. No, the truth is... and I think you'll agree with this, Republicans and Democrats, when they're talking to each other, agree much more about the issues than we disagree. And I think part of the issue is, especially in the days, you know, you get paid per click, you have to get that click. You have to get that headline. And so the media, and I mean all media, is driven by clicks. And that means you have to, you know, say things that make people click, and that often isn't conducive to talking, you know? So, and that's why I let you in, because you've always treated me nice. We've been in similar, you know, businesses, and, you know, overall, you're a decent guy, and just like last night proved, most of the time we were agreeing on things.
Yeah, and so the media, I would say the media does like, exactly, you called it exactly right. If it leads, it bleeds. That's kind of a political version of that tagline.
If it bleeds, it leads.
I said it wrong. Right? We liberals always get it backwards, right?
You do.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. It's even worse inside your party. If you disagree with the leadership, right, they ostracize you, right? There always seems to be a purity test. And I can't remember if I was talking with you about the purity test or somebody else. But, oh, I know who it was. One of my son's friends is a big left-wing goofball. And he was talking about, you know, there's a purity test going on for the Democrats. And I'm like, what I read, there's a purity test for the Republicans. They sent a thing out and said, you need to check off. And if you're pure enough, you know, we'll give you. And I'm like,
yeah,
it's ridiculous to have a purity test. You can have a different opinion and still be okay.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. No, it's a problem.
Are we heading toward authoritarianism?
The reason we're heading towards authoritarianism isn't because of Trump. Like we discussed right before we went on air here, we discussed about how, you know, the president over the years has slowly consolidated power because you have one branch, one particular branch of government that doesn't exercise its balancing duties, and that's Congress.
Well, Trump has gone beyond slowly consolidating power. He's doing it at a rapid speed in a direction that we've never seen.
Well, but he's only using the tools that have been available to him. He's not making up new things. He's using the things that are there now.
But it is happening.
And everybody's, you may think it's happening, but everybody has done it from, you know, like I said, the last time that Democrats and Republicans could get along to govern a country was under Reagan, and not because it was Reagan, but because they had a lot of things in common. They were World War II era people, right? And once those people retired, or died, as the case may be, then the split really started happening because they didn't have that one unifying force. That's my opinion. Hmm. But if you look at G.W. Bush, right? If you look at Clinton, if you look at Obama, there shouldn't be 500 executive orders issued, you know, in the course of a presidency.
Trump is doing is taking it to a new level, and he's doing it very quickly. And if we don't do something in the next couple of years, we could see ourselves under a full-blown authoritarian rule. And that may be more than you're willing to agree to.
I disagree.
But you still think we have to do something?
Well, yeah. And what we do is we vote the people out of Congress that are not willing to bring these executive orders to the floor. Yeah, that's no problem. I, you know, I'm really glad that you took up my offer to come stay at my house, because I did offer, you asked, and I said, yeah, that's great. You asked me to get some people together, and I'm glad that you suggested that. It was great in the evening of conversation.
Yeah.
Right? We had two left-wing goofballs, and we had two very reasonable Republicans in there. And one was a money guy. He added a lot to the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, the left-wing goofballs didn't, but, you know.
Well, you shouldn't expect anything from me.
And I don't.
All right, well.
Again, I don't know how likely it is that I'm going to immediately change somebody's mind and get them to say, oh, yeah, we're heading toward authoritarianism. We've got to stop this. We've got to save our democracy. We've got to do it now. But I think these conversations are helpful. And I think marching is helpful. I've always believed that that one good way to connect with people is to go on a long walk. And I have had people join me. Actually, Chuck Hurley joined me for 2.5 miles of the third day of the march. I couldn't talk Pat into joining me. But I had Tom Walton, who is an active Democrat in Dallas County, join me for 5 miles of the last day of the march. I think he was pretty tired at the end of that. If you're not used to it, yes, it's tough. But I want to get back to, you know, again, Trump, and let's talk about the different, I mean, the truth. You know, You look at the response that Republicans have had to Democrats regarding the shutdown, the government shutdown, which, as of the recording of this program, we are still in shutdown mode. I mean, the argument that, you know, that Democrats are willing to shut down the government because they want $1 trillion for health care for, quote, illegal aliens. You know, that's not true. I mean, there is about $1 trillion, I guess, for healthcare, and a teeny tiny, I think I saw that 0.004% of that might go to emergency medical care for some immigrant people. You know, it's a lie. And I've seen Democrats lie as well. I was lied about left and right when I ran for Congress by the establishment Democrats that didn't want me to win. But this kind of lies is so blatant and so clearly off the wall that it's just shameful. To be able to repeat them just shows a complete lack of any decency, I think. So, and then this is one example of the truth on trial here during the Trump administration. So another lie of sorts. I mean, Trump declared that he was going to be going after, quote, the worst of the worst in terms of deporting immigrants, criminals. Illegals who committed crimes, you know. Well, as of June, the Cato Institute, and the Cato Institute is not a liberal think tank. They are very pro-corporate. They are very libertarian. They are actually in favor of open borders because they think the free flow of labor ought to be as broad as the free flow of capital. And as of June, according to the research they'd done, 65% of the immigrants who had been arrested had no criminal convictions, and over 93% had never been convicted of a violent offense. So this whole campaign rhetoric of we're going to arrest the worst of the worst, the criminals, the rapists, the murderers, the drug dealers, well, 7% of those who've been arrested fit that description. And again, how they're handling this is, I know Steve Miller, one of Trump's lead guys, wants 3,000 people deported every day. He's unleashed ICE on Chicago. And the other night at midnight, 300 ICE officers and whoever else they had roped into the operation raided an apartment building in Chicago. And it had to be like a scene from a horrible movie. They came in Black Hawk helicopters. They came in military vehicles. They broke down apartment doors. They ransacked homes. And they hauled children out of their beds and away from their parents in the middle of the night. And that horror lasted for 3 hours. In the end, there were 37 people arrested. And again, we haven't had a chance to see what their, quote, criminal record is yet. But one of them, a guy named Roderick Johnson, is apparently a U.S. citizen. There's nothing resembling the campaign pledge to go after the worst of the worst. I mean, children out of their beds. I don't know how anybody can feel good about this. I don't know anybody can feel good about this. So Trump is also, of course, at war with the earth, and I was so appalled by what he had to say at the United Nations summit last week.
It's the greatest con job ever perpetrated on the world, in my opinion. Climate change, no matter what happens, you're involved in that. No more global warming, no more global cooling. All of these predictions made by the United Nations and many others, often for bad reasons, were wrong. They were made by stupid people that have cost their country's fortunes and given those same countries no chance for success. If you don't get away from this green scam, your country is going to fail. And I'm really good at predicting things, you know? They actually said during the campaign they had a hat, the best-selling hat. Trump was right about everything. And I don't say that in a braggadocious way, but it's true. I've been right about everything. And I'm telling you that if you don't get away from the green energy scam, your country is going to fail.
I think more than anything, I'm just deeply embarrassed for our country that was the presentation by our president before the entire universe of nations. I mean, insulting them, insulting scientists, stupid people. Scientists are stupid people, but Trump is brilliant, deserves a Nobel Peace Prize. Was right about everything. That hat, by the way, I'm pretty sure he's the one who ordered that hat be made. We'll see what happens in the next 4 weeks of my walk, but I can't imagine that more and more people aren't going to start seeing this charlatan for who he is and seeing where he's leading us. Again, I don't expect that everybody will, but I know that some people are. I know that there are quite a few people I've heard from who are questioning his stability and also the direction he's taking us and also his capacity to speak the truth and also his moral integrity. We'll see. Hey, I got to take a short break. This is Ed Fallon with you on the Fallon Forum. I'll be back in a minute with Kathy Burns as we do our October Garden Q&A. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, wherever you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help through the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay negotiated fee basis. Contact David Drake, familypsychiatry.com. All right, Ed Fallon with you and Kathy Burns joining me for our farm and food segment. And it being the first week of the month, it's time for our October Garden Q&A. And no, the gardening is not done yet, not even close.
I always see people taking out their gardens in September and I think, oh, we're just planting and things. We're about to plant our cold frame, will be cool.
Looking at various questions here, Kathy. One is, who wants to do a pepper seed swap? I'm interested in heirlooms we can save and package seeds. Meet up for coffee and swap away.
I think that's cool. I think the idea is great. So it's just important to be careful of the varieties, because if you're interested in heirlooms and you're swapping seeds with people, you may not be getting a true variety.
Now, some seeds are pretty easy to save, but peppers are tough.
And that's because of the distance they need to be from each other in order not to have cross-pollination. And some peppers need only 300 feet of distance. Some need as much as 1,600 feet of distance. This is according to Seed Savers in Decorah, Iowa.
So let's see. If you're growing peppers and a neighbor within 100 yards of you has another pepper plant, they could cross-pollinate.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to avoid. It's hard to know. Yeah. You have to go survey all your neighbors. What are you planting? What are you planting?
Or in some cases, don't people put bags over the plants to prevent the cross-pollination?
Yes. And then do they go hand-pollinate their own within? But also, if it limits you to planting one variety of pepper, unless right. you have acres of land, really, yeah. and are able to do that separation. So, yeah, go for it. But, you may not get the variety that you expect if you want a true heirloom.
Here's another question. Do I cut off the veggie plants and leave the roots in the ground or pull the whole plant up by the roots? That's a very general question.
It is, but especially a new gardener or food producer of any kind, it's a good question because there used to be this philosophy that you always tidy up your garden and pull everything out and make it all smooth and perfect. And then some people leave things in the ground just to keep that soil health going, to get kind of a cover crop
Erosion control.
And it really depends on what kinds of plants you had in there. And one thing in particular is, did you have disease in that soil, blight or bugs that would root?
Because tomatoes, we almost always have blight on our tomatoes, sometimes manageable, sometimes terrible. And we do not compost our tomato vines.
No.
Yeah. Although inevitably some blight is going to get into the soil and will eventually get into the compost and then back into the soil again.
Mm-hmm. So it's a crop-by-crop basis.
This is kind of a late question, but still relevant for us because we still have tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Somebody says, do you prune tomatoes?
I have been pruning our heirloom tomatoes more meticulously this year than ever. And although most people's tomato crops were not good, same as ours, we had very good cherry tomatoes. And I kept those very well pruned. And then you brought home the
determinants. Yeah. After our sauce tomatoes also come to an early blight, which was unusual, never seen that before, decided to try an experiment and picked up some determinate tomatoes. And again, tomato plants, they produce their foliage and their fruit comes all at once. And we planted those in mid-July, which is kind of crazy late, but they seem to be doing pretty well.
We'll see if we get any.
We're getting a good crop of tomatoes. They're all green.
Well, then I was out diligently starting to prune those tomatoes, and Ed, I didn't know because we don't. Right. I haven't planted.
They're different.
I haven't planted determinate tomatoes for 10 years.
Me neither. Yeah.
And I didn't know that you don't prune those. Yeah. So thanks for the heads up. It was a good experiment this year to prune the pepper leaves really well, the big leaves, and get that airflow. And we've had an amazing pepper crop this year. It allows the plant to put more energy toward producing fruit.
So here's a central Iowa question that might be relevant beyond Iowa. I think it is. I harvested popcorn that I grew in the Grimes Community Garden. Always feel blessed to reap a good harvest. Thanks to the Baptist Church for providing the land. Okay, that's not a question.
It's not a question. But I wanted to bring up the point that it is very cool for people to offer land to people who are looking to grow food. For example, I got to tour the Global Greens Farm that is managed by Lutheran Services in Iowa earlier this month. And it is a program that provides immigrant and refugee farmers with land and education to grow food and prepare to start their own farm businesses. It's a wonderful thing. Ed, we've had people in our neighborhood grant us land just that we could walk to and tend and get a lot more crops out that year. So, you know, if you have land, you're not sure what to do with it, you know, try to see who can use that.
And I don't know if this is a question, but it always surprises people when they see that we have greens in October, November, the winter, and then early March. If you want to get greens first thing in the spring, plant them in mid-October, in Iowa at least. Plant them in a cold frame. Mm-hmm. Lettuce, spinach, arugula, and you'll have great success in the spring.
Yep.
Hey, thanks, Kathy, and thanks, folks, for tuning into today's program. Thanks to the folks who hosted me on the Save America March, who shared comments and brief interviews on this program. Thanks to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Dederman, Charles Goldman, Kathy Burns, and myself, Ed Fallon. Thanks also to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, and Architecture by Synthesis. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners, Catholic Peace Ministry, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. And finally, thanks to the Des Moines Ivor Session for our bumper music. We'll be back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.